950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Democrat of the day, we head to the north side of the metro area, Senate District 36, Senator John Hoffman, longtime friend of the radio station, longtime friend of the show. He's kind enough to join us today to talk about the Democrat of the day, as well as all the things that he's up to. Senator, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Hey, it's February 1st, man, and to be the Democrat of the day on the first day of February is absolutely awesome and cool. How are you?
I'm doing well. How in the heck is your district getting all the cool restaurants now?
we got some of the coolest. We still have. I mean, you look at some of the coolest restaurants that you're going to have in the North Metro. If you want truly classic Italian, that is absolutely beyond anybody's scope of imagination, right? The Buenos Aires in Champlin has been there for 20-some years. Champlin. I'm not doing a payola, by the way. I pay for everything I do when I go to eat there. So, you can't get the radio in trouble there on that one. But absolutely, it is the place. It's kind of like popping left and right here,
Well,
Name it. We got it here. So
I think with 610 being built now and going across, which is just such a nice addition up there. But you got 610 up there. And now it's like all of a sudden it's like, wait a second, there's a whole bunch of people up here and everyone's coming. I mean, it is a great district to move into. Brooklyn Park, Champlin, and Coon Rapids, right?
That is correct. You got it right. Senate District 36, it's kind of been the triadic thing for 40-some years because of the Mississippi River. You know, it goes back to when it was like District 49 and then 47, which was, before 47, it was Gene Merriam, who is still around, and then Leo Foley was the senator here when it was District 47, and it was basically the three communities, and then they've had one thing in common, is that Mississippi River, and of course, Darby Nelson, who for years was a state rep up here, mm-hmm. and he just passed away. I mean, the reason we have clean water in Minnesota, because this professor from the PhD in physiologic something, it was just just enormous. He taught me more in the few years that I knew him about clean water than anybody has ever taught in my history. I mean, it's just absolutely, and he's a missed treasure for the state of Minnesota, and because of the LCCMR, because we, when I did the Clean Water Accountability Act in 2014, it was at the bequest of Darby. I mean, he really said, look, we got to have one of the agencies got to be able to be that final authority in making sure that we have clean water from non-point source pollution, and we made it happen. And so, hats off to him. He's a treasured soul for the state of Minnesota, and he's a loss this year. So, that is something that I don't think any of us will ever realize, just, what he meant to our district and what he meant to the state of Minnesota for clean water.
So. And the legacy goes on well beyond his political service and helping out and still helping to craft legislation. Again, that's kind of, you and him share that quality. And this is one of the things I like about you, Senator, is that you care about the constituents. You care about your district. You care about Minnesota. And you if you're only in there to push an agenda or do the bidding of a handful of bankrollers of your campaign, you're not going to do good for the constituents. You're there for the people, and that's a true sign. That's one of the reasons I'm a big fan of yours as well.
Well, thanks, Matt. And this last session, for example, 94% of all my bills were bipartisan. People said, really? That still happens? I'm like, well, yeah. If you believe in common good and you believe in common ground, it's what I said in 2012 and in 2020. And people up here just said, can you just set aside the bickering and finger pointing, and can you absolutely work together to get things done? And then it dawned on me, there was a gentleman, Jim Ramstead, for years, who represented our congressional district, right? Which now Dean Phillips has, right? And
yeah.
Dean is absolutely the best of the best when it comes to that. But Jim Ramstead used to say, put your partisan politics out in the hallway. If we're talking about education or health and human services, we got to look at being pragmatic and common sense. And it dawned on me. I thought, wow, what a concept that was. And then it really hit me that he meant what he said when he always started off his town halls talking about Paul Wellstone and how they used to go do dinner together, how they worked together. The whole parody, mental health parody stuff was done because of Paul Wellstone and Jim Ramstead. It's like, imagine that. Mm-hmm. Two guys that if you sat down on the political spectrum and said, where do you exist? Rammer's going to be in the middle and Wellstone was going to be a little bit to the left of that. But yet, man, did they find common ground, man. And I think it still can be done. If you look at your region, if you look at your constituency, if you look at what people really want, they don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. Mm-hmm. Just go get it done. Roll up your sleeves and work.
You know, I want to bring that up, though, because, I mean, last session here, as we go through some of this stuff, I mean, you had the Republicans in the Senate turn down the amendment to basically say, hey, white supremacists can't be cops in Minnesota. There are some people that would say, well, that's a pretty good no-brainer. You know, it's like members of extremist groups probably shouldn't be police officers. But yet that was kind of pushed aside. What do you see as the key to convince Republicans that, you know, hey, this is a no-brainer, clean water, let's say. I mean, obviously clean water is a good idea. How do you convey that when you go out there and say, you know, I've got a bunch of Democrats with me, the DFLers are on my side, how about we get you on our side as well? How are you able to pull that off?
Well, you got to look at it's the 80-20 rule, right? If just because you disagree with me 20% of the time and you agree with me 80% of the time, it doesn't make you my enemy, Matt. I mean, you got to depersonalize everything. It's got to get to the focus at hand. And I think that's the only way you get to it. And I'll give you a couple of examples. 2 years ago, Senator Abler from Anoka, right, a Republican, and myself, we were fighting to try to keep some of our adult day centers and home and community-based services providers afloat during this pandemic, because all of a sudden, you know, they shut their doors. And it's like, well, wait a minute, we still have to pay this, we still have to pay that. How are we going to be able to do this? And the Fed said, well, if you do some flexible options, you can sure keep that money and pay it, right? And it was like brick wall after brick wall after brick wall. And I finally, the libertarian in the Republican Party, right, a senator, a libertarian, he said to me as I was talking to him about just how frustrating, he said, you know what? This is what government's about. He said, I want to get involved. Oh, my God, Matt. You don't think at that point all of a sudden I had an ally. I'm probably not going to agree with him on, you know, 80% of his stuff. But the fact is, in this case, he was a huge ally, and people on my side of the aisle were saying, wow, he just signed on to one of your bills. You're actually working with him. And I said, yeah. And they go, wow, how'd you do that? I said, oh, by the way, he still hates government. But yeah, in this case, this is what he said government's for. And so if people can set aside some of that partisan crap that's out there, Matt. And I mean it not in the sense that there's partisan stuff, because you and I will sit here and we'll have a conversation about there are some things that the Republicans will do. You just go, oh, my God, did you guys really say that or do that? It's like, come on. On the same side, there's some things some of our Democrat colleagues will say or do. And you go, did you really say that or do that? But I can't personalize it. It's not about me, right, man? Mm-hmm. It's about what I'm here to do, which is to do the quest of the people that we're here to serve. And so when we're talking about good schools, safe neighborhoods, quality roads, clean water, compassionate care for our elderly and people with disabilities, fair tax policy, good paying jobs, aren't those values that we all care about? Aren't those values that we could all say, yeah, I love it, right? Mm-hmm. We all want clean water. You brought that up, right? Yeah. We all want clean water, right? I want to fish in it. I want to swim in it. I want to run my boat in it. I'm going to move some product up and down it. But you know what? I want clean water. I want to use that water to grow plants. Farmers want clean water. Sometimes we just got to educate people about what does that mean? You know, why aren't we doing more buffer laws? Why aren't we doing more stuff? Because if the outcome is clean water, we can all agree that's a value that we want. Same thing with roads, right? It's just how you get there is really going to be the debate on how it, right? Mm-hmm. And the joke is sometimes I absolutely, back in 2013, Governor Dayton, when he said, you know what? I want to raise my taxes. I want to get some fairness in tax. I want to get some tax fairness here, fair tax policy, right? And he put that extra layer in, and I'm not a tax person, but I just remember we raised taxes on the top 1%, which was enough money to be able to pay back the schools. Because remember, prior to that, the previous administration borrowed $2.6 billion from our school district.
Oh, so Pirate Pawlenty. I remember Pirate Pawlenty raiding the school district budgets. Yeah, I remember that.
And then Matt, he goes, well, yeah, I balanced the budget. No, you didn't. You balanced it on the backs of the third generation of kids that are going to be coming through that you promised to pay, right?
Yeah.
Well, I absolutely agree with Mark Dayton, you know, a fair tax policy. And you know, the joke is among, you know, some of the colleagues on the other side of the aisle, they go, well, just ask Hoffman, you know, his response is to raise taxes in the top 1%. And I will sit there and tell them, absolutely, I don't think the rich pay a fair share of their taxes. Yeah, do they pay more taxes? They sure do. But when you look at it, is it a fair tax policy? That's a question on the table. And so I'll always say I don't think they do.
So, where's all, outstate districts? Where does most of your tax dollars come back into your district from? Oh, that's right. Never mind.
Yeah. Carrie Dietzick one time. I love her, right? She and Ann Rest, when we were in the majority, and I'll never forget, she drew a picture of the state of Minnesota on this board, and then she circled Hennepin County, and then she started running all these dollar bills out of Hennepin County. And she goes, you know what that is, Hoffman? That's most of the tax dollars coming from this county are going out to help offset, you know, other counties. And I, you know, I sat there and I kind of smiled. But what she said was true. It's exactly to your point, right?
Yeah. No. Nice. Yeah. It is. You and I could just sit and chat all day. I love having you on. By the way, we should do that. We'll have a show where you just, we're not going to talk politics. You and I will just talk about anything we want to talk about. I'm going to have you back for that for sure. But I want to get into.
Just let it fly. Just go.
we'll have the dump button ready to go. So coming up this session, as you look at the new session, you're the ranking minority member on the Human Services Reform, Finance and Policy Committee. You're also on aging and long-term care, as well as technology and reform. What are some of the issues that you're looking to try to champion coming up in this next session, especially anything for Senate District 36?
Well, let's look at this, and it's across the board, right? Workforce within the home and community-based services. It makes absolutely zero sense that, you know, on one hand, the state of Minnesota, which in the first time in history, we have more people 65 and older, right? So we have than we do in the K-12 education system. So we got this growing group of individuals 65 and older, and we want to keep people in their homes, right? That's a value we all want to share, right? Well, what do you need? You need some home and community-based service providers to go in there. But if your reimbursement rates are at $14.60 an hour, and I can go and get a job at Burnsville McDonald's starting at $21 an hour, something's wrong with that, right? And so it's not keeping up the home and community-based services. So workforce incentives, what else can we put on the table? You know, if you want to go back to school, how can we pay for your schooling? If you want to get a career letter going, how can we get you in there so you want to become a nurse? You can do it, right? But at the same time, also increase money to be able to help offset some of the fact that folks in home and community-based services can't compete against the other providers out there, right, of services. And so, and I mean services like food service or whatever it is. And so one of the things we talk about is, you know, what can we do to really, really look at helping with the workforce issue? Not just the home and community-based, but also our nursing homes. You're talking 23,000 job vacancies in one of the sectors and 20,000 in the other. So you got 43,000 people job vacancies within those sectors in our aging and compassionate care for elderly and people with disabilities. We got to do something about it. That's number one. Number two, because of that workforce, group homes are shutting down, right? Mm-hmm. So you got group homes that are shutting the doors. You know, you talk about compassionate care for people. If all of a sudden we can't support our group homes, which are, you know, true and tied for, you know, tried and true for the state of Minnesota for many, many years. It's like something's wrong with that. We need to deal with that. And then, I'll get a little wonky. We need to recodify the DWR system, the disability waiver rate system service in Minnesota. We need to recodify it in law to make it consistent with what the Centers for Medicaid Services say we should be doing. And that's what we'll do. So that'll be a big policy discussion. The other one is the ABLE Act, which we were one of the first states to really look at that. ABLE Act was to allow people to put money into a trust to take care of, you know, compassionate care for people that might have a special health care need. And so that needs to get consistent with some of the federal pieces. And then we're still looking at some child care initiatives that need to be looked at because, you know, if we don't have a good child care system in the state of Minnesota, you can't get people to work because people are going to have to be at home. And so it's like, how do you find the balancing act there? And so that'll definitely come into our existence. And then on the aging and long-term care, you know, we're still going to be dealing with the nursing home situation. Again, it's workforce, but it's also some of the regulations within nursing home. How are we ensuring we're getting compassionate care? And I keep using the word compassionate care because that's what it's about, right? As our population is increasing, the aging is increasing, we're also seeing a need on the Medicaid side of that, right? You go from, you know, 900,000 people to now 1.1 or 1.3 million people 65 and older. And I told you K-12 education is 850,000 kids, right? But now you're in a million and up, and it's going. The Medicaid cost is going to go from $1 billion to $3 billion in the next 2 years, right? And I think we might even be close to that $3 billion hit right now. That's just to provide the care for our folks that are going to be on, you know, medical assistance as elderly people, right? And so it's like, all right, how are we going to be able to deliver, you know, investments within those structures to do it? And I think now is the time to do it. I mean, if you look at the forecast, if the forecast stays, Matt, right, $7.7 billion forecast, right? So $3 billion goes to the bank to pay the bank because we owe the bank money. And then we got the uninsurance piece too. You know, we do, the trust was spent down. We owe the feds $1.3 billion. And then, of course, to make that trust whole, you got to add another $1.3 or $1.4 billion to that, right? So it's the debate is, all right, so what do you do with that? So let's say you take that. That still gives you $3 or $4 billion that can go and really do some infrastructure support and create some good paying jobs to people, right? And at the same time, we also need to, you know, get some tax breaks for people that have paid, small businesses and the mom and pops, you know, the middle class tax cuts. So I think it's going to be a busy session, Matt. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping all the things I just threw up at you, you know, are going to be, you know, talked about. And there's more.
Well,
there's tons of more stuff.
Well, do, right? you're just what you're saying, though, is this is how you get things done, is because you know your facts. And this is it. I mean, if you just listen to the last 5 minutes of the senator, you know why he's able to get not only the DFL on board, but also some Republicans on board, too, because he knows his stuff, and he's just dealing with stuff, which is just no-brainer things to do. Quickly here, your caucus tonight in 36. How are you guys doing it up there?
Yeah, contactless, right? Okay. We're going to be hanging out at the school. People can drive up and, you know, hand your stuff, say hi. You know, we're still being very cautious of the fact that, you know, I don't want to, you know, a whole bunch of people in a room. So,
yeah.
You know, we need to, you know, priority A, take care of each other. Right.
Yep.
So contactless, that's what we're doing.
All right. And then, go ahead.
If it's at Champlin Park High School, people want to come by and drop off their forms to want to be part of the, you know, the convention that's going to happen in March, then, you know, bring it, go on to the website, the Secretary of State's office or the DFL website, and you can print out the form. You can do that or send me an email at, you know, john@johnhoffmanmn.com, and I can send you a link to that as well. So
I believe it's minvotes.com, mnvotes.org is for the state, the Minnesota
Perfect.
Secretary of State. And that will tell you not only if you're in 36 what the details are, but any district. You can find out at the Minnesota Secretary of State's website how to participate in the caucuses tonight. Your campaign, johnhoffmanmn.com, correct?
That is correct. It's all one word, johnhoffmanmn.com. Go check it out. There's you know, there's a note about being in unprecedented times, and we're trying to keep each other safe, and we need to try keeping afloat and working together to get through this, right? Mm-hmm. I still believe in that. So
johnhoffmanmn.com. If for no other reason, go up there and do some door knocking for Senator Hoffman for this reason. They're great restaurants up there. He'll give you some suggestions on where you can dine after you knock on some doors. The district is quite nice up there in 36. Senator John Hoffman, Democrat of the day. Senator, thank you very much. All my best on the caucus tonight and all my best in this upcoming year, my friend.
And all my best to you and everybody at AM 950. It's my favorite station. It's why I always I advertise on 950 AM. So you guys are great. So be well.